Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
We are back with an episode of Lakers Explained with myself, Christian Rivas, and my co-host, Harrison Fagan. It is a beautiful day to stay indoors, which is about the only way I can put it. Harrison, how are you doing in this honestly very weird time? This past weekend, I celebrated a birthday party on Animal Crossing. So it is a strange time that we're living in.
You know, thank you, Chris. I am doing all right, and I'm doing a lot better than your first intro into this podcast that we ended up cutting. I also have to say that A Beautiful Day to Stay Indoors is my least favorite Mr. Rogers song. I think I could speak for all of us when I say I'm doing as well as possible under the circumstances. Like, I think that's about the best answer anyone can give right now. I'm honestly doing a little bit better having watched the basketball game that we just watched because, man, I normally am not like a rewatch sporting events guy, like, or TV shows, anything. I almost never rewatch anything. Once I've watched it once, I'm like, that was good. I've downloaded that into my brain and I'm good. But I don't know if it's just not having any fresh sports, but like rewatching these old, like these like classic Kobe games or classic Lakers games has actually like been a lot more fun than I thought it would be during the like whole shutdown thing.
I totally agree. And for those that have no idea what we're talking about, on Monday, April 13th, NBA TV re-aired Kobe Bryant's 60-point finale in honor of it being the four-year anniversary. And where were you when that game was going on? Like, obviously, if I have my timelines correctly, you were probably working. So what was going on that day? I mean, outside of work.
Yeah, so I was covering the game for this fine website itself. I was not covering the game from the building because I was not, important enough for that yet, and which is fine. I had very little relevant experience, and, that's just where I was at in my career. So I was watching that game, writing about it from the comfort of my favorite armchair that I do not have anymore because my cat ruined it. But it was in my first college apartment. And I was just watching it, like, on, you know, the TV that I still have, just sitting back by myself, like, taking in the moment, enjoying it. I was, like, prepared for a brutal night of work that, because I just knew, like, we were going to have to write a million things. It was just an important night. Like, I knew that there was going to be a lot of work to do. And I honestly, like, I did not think that the moment was going to be as incredible and kind of euphoric as it was. Like, I think, from my recollection, most people who listen to this know that I'm most of the time kind of a pessimist. Like, I thought it was going to be like, yeah, you know, like they were going to try and feed Kobe. He was going to try and score. And then they were either going to lose or play a whatever game against the Jazz, maybe win. Who cares? Because they were like, I think their slot in the lottery was locked in at that point. Yeah. And like, I just thought it was going to be a whatever game. And then we were going to get like kind of just, you know, lukewarm send off quotes and whatever. And then it ended up being like, honestly, probably a more storybook ending than I think Kobe himself as a storyteller ever could have written, or like really any writer. Like, if you brought it to, I believe he said this after the game, if you brought it to an executive at a movie studio, they would say that ending is like it's too Hollywood, it's not realistic.
Yeah.
And so to watch as incredible as that game was, and it still holds up today, and then, like, just listen to him talking afterwards and, like, how genuine it all was and how much he was clearly basking in the moment and how reflective he was, like, it ended up being, like, an incredibly fun, like, game to cover, and, like, it was just as much fun to rewatch it tonight, maybe even more so just because we've had so little to be excited about.
Yeah, I think that whole season of Kobe interviews, post-game interviews, was just kind of strange because every season prior to that, Kobe just wanted to win a championship and didn't care about anything else. And I think there was a point in the season, probably when he decided he was going to retire, at least publicly, where he thought, let's just have fun with this. Like, even if I didn't want a retirement tour, it's coming to me anyway. Might as well play nice with everybody. And he absolutely did. And I think,
yes, he didn't want a retirement tour. He, the man who announced his like retirement in a poem on the Players Tribune, like, I think like 60 or so games before he actually retired, and then made an Oscar winning short film about that. No, he didn't enjoy it at all. It cracks me up every time Rob Pelinka's like, Kobe isn't one that would have liked to trumpet his accomplishments. Like, I say this with all due respect to Kobe. Kobe really, like it was pretty clear Kobe enjoyed trumpeting his accomplishments getting his narrative and whatever. Like, this is meant, and I appreciated that about him and enjoyed that aspect of his personality. Like, and especially that last season where it was clear that it's like you said, like almost a switch flipped once he said, I'm retiring, where he just went into, like, I just called it old man Kobe mode. And he just, like, he was basically just, as the children would say, kept it 100 about everything and just gave these incredibly candid like post-game quotes. I remember, like, I did an oral history of his final season in his own words for a silver screen role, like, where I just basically I took a post-game quote from Kobe from every single game that season and to kind of sum up, like, and basically weave the tale of how his career ended. And that was so much fun picking out those, especially like after the retirement announcement, just because he was so clearly like he just wanted to tell his story, and like he had no reason to BS anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of these guys, like, they have business interests and they have, like, they don't want to maybe like piss off other players or whatever because they're going to still be around the league or give them extra motivation or whatever. Kobe just didn't care about any of that anymore and was just letting it fly, and it was like really enjoyable to watch and cover and be around.
Do you think there was any point of that season, looking at the roster that they acquired, like that they made in free agency, that and knowing how much he had in the tank himself, that Kobe Bryant thought to himself, like, I'm going to make one last push this year?
I feel like Kobe is the type of person that, like, and I bet we could probably go back to that summer and, like, look it up. Like, you know, this team. Okay, so first of all, let's get to the game really quickly, like, because that's sensibly what we're talking about, like, here. When I turned on that game and I saw Roy Hibbert on the floor, I genuinely forgot that that was the season that Roy Hibbert played for the Lakers. And it was just weird to watch him as a part of that Kobe farewell game when I literally, I guess, had erased all memory and knowledge of that from my memory, that he was out there. But, like, you got, like, that's the Roy Hibbert that we remember from that season. It's like the guy who just could not stay on his feet, continually falling down. Billy Mack even said in the broadcast at this point, like, Roy Hibbert down on the floor, he's been there a lot this year. And it's like, oh, Billy Mack, just, he knows he doesn't have to work with Roy Hibbert and fly with him next year. He's ready to go. Like, and, like, I think, but going into that season, it was the Roy Hibbert that had been, like, did he win a Defensive Player of the Year? I don't remember if he actually won, but he had basically... Yeah, he had revolutionized verticality under now Lakers head coach Frank Vogel, and with those excellent Pacers defenses. And so getting him, like, everybody thought that, okay, like, that's a good player. Russell's going to be, like, pretty NBA ready and ready to contribute during his rookie season. Clarkson's going to come back, like, second year stronger. They have Randall, you know, like, ready to make his debut. And, you know, I remember distinctly that there were people talking about that team like they were a playoff potential fringe contender for that. Like, not... I don't think that I ever made that argument, but I do remember that there were people who made it. And all this is to say that Kobe was such a competitor. Like, to go back to your original question, I think he, of course, he probably talked himself into, I'm going to make one last run with this roster. Like, he was Kobe. He thought he could win with anyone. Like, the fact that he thought that they could win, like, this game almost sums up the audacity of, like, the confident and, like, the not audacity, like, the just insane level of confidence that Kobe had in himself, that he even thought they could win this game. Like, the Jazz going into this game, if they had won it, would have had maybe a chance to make the playoffs. They needed other things to go their way that didn't end up going their way anyway. But, like, the Jazz were a good team that year, and the Lakers were horrible. It's their worst record ever. And they were like, and like Kobe was still like, they were down 20 and he's like, all right, I'm just going to start shooting and lead us back. And so there's not a doubt in my mind that Kobe thought that there was a chance that if everything broke right, he stayed healthy, whatever, there was a chance they could compete for a playoff spot. I don't think he probably even in the off season was like, we could win a title with this team, but I am 100% certain that he thought they could make the playoffs. And I bet that there are quotes of him saying as much if we went back and looked.
I think if Kobe were about even 5 years younger with this team or with the team that he had in the 2015-16 season, I have no doubt that he probably could have led them to a playoff spot. Because
that would have been pre-Achilles Kobe, who was as efficient as he's ever been. So, yeah. Like, I don't know if I'm as sure of that as you are, because the rest of that roster really was not good.
It was horrible. But yeah. If Kobe was putting up those types of 60-point performances on a nightly basis, which with that team he would have had to, and even honestly, even if he didn't have to, with the perception of, like, D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson, the other guards on that roster, just like the other scorers on that roster, just would have been hard. I want to do a quick correction here. Roy Hibbert was a runner-up in Defensive Player of the Year voting in the 2013-14 season, came second to Joakim Noah, and made the all-defensive second team that same year. So he was an all-defensive player, not Defensive Player of the Year, and certainly didn't look like it during his time with the Lakers.
No, he did not at all. And like, but it was more just to say that, like, he was an incredible defender. For sure. And like, arguably, like, he was the guy that really helped. He, like, number one, it kind of forced LeBron to develop a 3-point shot. Like, I know LeBron always credits the Spurs, but like, he had to do that in those series against the Pacers too, because Roy Hibbert's verticality, like, really did impede them on some level. Like, obviously, they still won all of those series. This was not like Roy Hibbert was the LeBron stopper, but he was the LeBron make it more difficult on her. And like, you know,
coin it's, that.
Yeah, exactly. I should trademark that and just like get sued by Roy Hibbert. That's exactly what my financials need. And like, but he was good. He was considered good. And people were like, oh yeah, like, he's going to rebound with the Lakers. He'll help them be respectable on defense. Yeah. And I think that was the year that, number one, like, the league started to shift away, like, that kind of defense, people learned how to exploit it. And also, like, we kind of discovered that the defenders around Hibbert were about as important to that level of defense as Hibbert was. Like, his skills were obviously great, but a big part of it was what role he was in and having, like, just incredible, like, arms and, like, lengthy defenders around him. Like, Lance Stephenson, Paul George, George Hill, David West, like, those guys were a big part of how good Roy Hibbert was defensively for those teams, too. And, you know, the Lakers learned that the hard way after they made that trade. Although, still, like, I think they gave out a couple second-round picks, so it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, whoever they acquired that year, unless it was an all-star player, it was always just going to be rough. And that being said, as horrid as that season was, we haven't even mentioned the fact that Byron Scott was head coach. It all ended with this grand finale that I think a lot of people were expecting, but it didn't always seem like it. Like, the first half, at the start of the first quarter, Kobe Bryant was just seemingly, like, on fire. It seemed like it was going to be one of those nights for him. He looked good, had an extra pep in his step. And then the second quarter, they just got totally outplayed. Like, the Jazz
I'm going to cut you off real quick on the first quarter thing. That first quarter that they showed on NBA TV was not the entire first quarter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They skipped the brutal opening stretch. But yeah, then Kobe started to get going and the Lakers started to get going a little bit. I had to stop you there because, like, people who did not watch the rewatch with us tonight are going to be, like, questioning your, like, continued employment and, like, your basketball knowledge and whatever.
Utah started off on a 6-0 run. It was very bad. And then Kobe Bryant just started going, like, bananas from the floor. And at that point I was like, all right, well, this is what I came here for. I was at a pizza place called Michelangelo's in Ontario. A little free advertisement for you there. Best pizza and wings.
Christian's free ad of the day.
it's really good. Support, hey, Support your local businesses during this
time. No, you know what? I'm okay with it this time. Like, honestly, this is a local business worth supporting. This is not like your random brand shout outs for people that aren't paying us. This is fine.
But it was. I love watching games at that place. But it was so funny because after that first quarter, when the Lakers started struggling at the second quarter, there were so many people there that had not watched the Lakers game since 2010. And some guy who was pretty drunk started yelling, put Meta in the game. Like, why isn't Meta in the game? Shouldn't he be starting? And I know for a fact he was not joking because he started chanting, we want Meta, and tried to get other people in on it. Which like, if he was joking, that would be a pretty funny thing to do. Like, I'd do a similar thing with Alex Caruso now if the Lakers were losing, but I'd mean it with everything in my heart. But it was that type of crowd, like just Lakers fans that hadn't watched a game in a while. Why would they? They were so bad that season. And I think it just goes to show that Kobe Bryant nor the Lakers had been competitive for like, God, almost 3 years at that point. But people still gathered to watch this guy who they had watched for, depending how old they were, like a decade or even two decades. Have the you know, a fitting send-off to one of the most prolific scorers the NBA has ever seen. And when we come back, we'll talk about the juicy part of the game, because the first half, boy, was it rough. So we'll come back and talk a bit about that.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
So anybody that rewatched the game with us on Monday knew the first half wasn't exactly the boost of inspiration or even a source of optimism for anybody watching that game. The Lakers had lost a lot of games that year, but I think losing that game would have really hurt.
They had lost 65 games that year, to be exact.
Thank you for the clarification.
Most losses they've ever had in their entire franchise history.
Can you even... I don't know if I've just blocked it out from my memory, but can you even imagine losing that many games in a season at this point, after everything you've experienced that you've seen with the Lakers this season? The idea of only winning 17 games in a season is absolutely nuts to me.
The Lakers won 17 games this year, like basically the first 2 months. I remember I tweeted it out. Like, they have now tied the 2015-16 Lakers win total in their first like month and a half or something like that. This year, like, it's funny because we almost paint it with rose-colored glasses because that final game was so awesome, especially the second half. And it really goes to show that, like, if you stick the landing, it really doesn't matter what came before. And, like, that season was horrible. And to answer your question, yes, I can imagine the Lakers being that bad and losing that many games, because I covered every single damn one of them that year and did like a live post-game show about them for this site when we used to do.
I'm so sorry.
Like, all this stuff, like, you know, that was not an enjoyable year to cover in large part. Like, you talked about the badness of that roster. Like, I just want to read it off real quick. Brandon Bass, Tarik Black, Anthony Brown, Kobe, Jordan Clarkson, Roy Hibbert, Marcelo Huertas, Ryan Kelly, Larry Nance Jr., Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Robert Sacre, Lou Williams, a 97-year-old Meta World Peace, and Nick Young. That was not, like, it's funny, like, you go back and look at it now, and you're like, actually, there is some talent there, but it was just not talent that fit together in any way. And as you mentioned, the man helming the team, you know, like, I mean, all I need to say is that Anthony and I shit-talked him so much that season that we had to institute a fine system on our podcast afterwards, where if either of us said his name, the other one got to tweet something from their account. So, like, that goes to show, like, just how bad that year was and, like, how much blame I think there was to go around, and especially at the top, but, like, mostly to go around. And, yeah, it was not – but the second half, anyway, of that game – was obviously the much more exciting one. And I thought that it was funny that NBA TV basically showed every single second of that half that Kobe played. Yeah. Whereas, like, the first half, it felt like the first half took 20 minutes and the second half was like an hour long. And it was just, it just really, like, sums up how much of that, like, really where the emphasis was in that game. And, like, I also just think, like, there were a lot of things that kind of jumped out at me because I haven't rewatched that game since. And, like, I don't know, I was just wondering, like, from you, like, what did you forget about that game? And, like, what stood out to you most rewatching it now?
I think the thing I forgot was the fact that anybody else shot the ball. Like, in the third quarter, to start the second half, the Lakers were down 15 points, and then they went on a run led by Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. to get them within five.
Two members of the vaunted young core, none of whom are here anymore.
Yeah, I got a text from a friend during our rewatch saying, God, can you believe we thought these were the guys? And, like, to be honest, If you made a roster of everyone the Lakers drafted from, like, 2014 to 2018, maybe not 18, because 18 was the Mo and Bonga year, or was that
2000?
Yeah.
I mean, Mo kind of scores now, so.
Yeah, he's actually not bad. But my point is, if you made that roster now at that state of their careers, it would probably be, like, a seventh seed in the Eastern Conference. So I'll stand by that take. I don't care. But if you look at that roster, there are only five active NBA players from that roster. And it's not, like, part of it has to do with old age. Like, obviously, Roy Hibbert and Brandon Bass aren't going to be playing anymore. But some of them are just straight up bad. And that's why they're not playing anymore.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, you know, like, Robert Sacre is doing a podcast about Gonzaga now. Like,
is he actually?
Yeah, he actually is.
Oh my God. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I saw a video of him the other day on Twitter, riding a horse through the streets of, Washington. And, you know, like, I'm just, like, dying laughing at what people must have thought at the 7-foot guy riding a horse around town, around, like, their deserted, like, lockdown town. And, like, what a sight that must have been for anyone driving by. But, yeah, I mean, this roster was not good. Like, I mean, we all thought Anthony Brown kind of or at least I did. Like, I thought Anthony Brown was going to be good. And yeah, he had some flashes defensively, but I believe he's out of the league or in the G League or something. Like,
yeah,
he has not panned out at all. Like, Marcelo Huertas, like, he was, I think, like, a 30-year-old rookie, so I don't know how many of us expected him to still be around now, but it, you know, he's gone. Ryan Kelly's out of the league, like, had his career ruined by Byron playing him small forward,
and
yeah, that he would have actually turned into something.
I do, absolutely.
Yeah, that was the main thing that stuck out to me, was, like, I just forgot how, like, a lot of the guys on this team, first of all, and, like, how bad that team was for a lot of the season. But I also, like, completely forgot, like, how far they were behind and that almost the entire game was a comeback. Like, you mentioned the Clarkson Nance part, like, Kobe was shooting a ton to try and get them back into it. And, like, things really did not look good there. And I tweeted with, like, 2:30 left, I think they were down, like, 8 or something like that. And I'm like, I still do not understand how the Lakers won this game. And, like, if I was watching at home, like, there's no way I thought they were going to complete that comeback. And, like, it's just, it's crazy. Like, Kobe basically turned it into a storybook ending.
Yeah, with 3:20 to go on the game clock, the Lakers were down by 10 points.
Yeah.
And So Kobe Bryant makes a jumper. The Jazz answer right back. And from that jumper he made, for the rest of the game, he just doesn't miss a shot. And these were not open shots. These were heavily contested shots. Shots he had to create for himself after playing God knows how many minutes. I don't know why I said God knows how many minutes. I have it pulled up right here.
Lord knows. If only there was some way to know.
He played 42 minutes that game.
Yeah.
Like, if I take care of my body for the rest of my life, I will maybe be able to play 12 minutes of NBA basketball at the age of 37.
I'm going to be honest with you. There's no chance in hell.
I'm saying if they threw me in a game as a favor, not I'd have to go through the process of making a roster.
No, like getting... you would not collapse from running back and forth up and down the court for 12 minutes is what you're saying.
Yeah. If I took care of pristine care of my body for the rest of my life up until the point I'm 37.
No, it was so funny to watch how tired he clearly was. He could barely jump at the end. Like, he airballed a three at one point in the third quarter. Like, that was a desperate shot. He had to beat the shot clock because
it was to end the first half.
Oh, was it in the first half? Yeah. The Lakers' offense, shockingly, had went nowhere in the half court. as the people who watched the previous 81 games never would have guessed. No need to change that up for the final one. And so, he was so tired. Stu Lance was killing me on this rewatch. It felt like every other comment he made was about how tired Kobe looked at that point in the game. He's like, look at him. He can barely even get his feet up. And it's like, come on, Stu. He's old. Slack. I just thought it was he was so clearly winded. There were so many moments where when he was running back, and they showed the slow-mo replay, he's just staring off into space, trying to keep from collapsing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, shout out to number one for Kobe for being insane enough to continue playing through how tired he must have actually been after putting his body through that entire season and all the comebacks from injuries in the previous 3 years and all of that stuff. And also credit to the Lakers training staff for keeping him upright somehow for all of those 37 minutes or however many you said it was.
Yeah. I too was cracking up at Stu Lance comments, or just the commentary in general, because they were talking about Gordon Hayward having ties to Brad Stevens and what that meant for him. And I was like, well, that story doesn't exactly have a happy ending for Jazz fans. And then they were talking about the Warriors game that was going on ESPN. And Stu Lance goes, well, they better finish it off because you don't get a trophy for regular season wins. And I was like, they did not.
Stu Lance, as many know, the creator of rings culture.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong. I think Billy Mack responded to that saying, yeah, if they don't do that, they're just going to end up a trivia question. And it's like, yeah, they did.
It would have been really funny. It's almost one of those moments where you're rewatching something and you it kind of starts to feel like a movie where they're doing this really oblivious, obvious, blatant foreshadowing. And yeah. Sue's going to go man, yeah, if they lose, they're going to have to get Kevin Durant or something. Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would have been really funny. That would have just put it over the top.
Somebody should edit that in. Just get Stu, just do a Lucas cut of Star Wars and the re-release of the special editions and just CGI that Stu voice back in. That probably wouldn't take too much effort, and it would be really funny when people go back to watch the game.
And Stu's, I don't know what he's doing right now. He's kind of just vacationing right now. But to your point about how much it took Kobe, when I was watching that game and they were down 10 points, I said to myself, it is going to take everything Kobe Bryant has. If there was another game, even 3 days later, I think that would be it. Kobe would just shut down for the rest of the season because it had to take literally every ounce of basketball he had left in him to come back 10 with 3 minutes left in the game.
And yeah, no, forget load management. If they had another game 3 days later, it would have just been DNP parentheses tired as hell.
Yeah. Hey, because he was even before he went on that insane run, you could tell that he was just gassed. I played youth soccer at one point in my life, and there were times because I was one of the better players on the team that I'd play the whole 90 minutes, and I know what it feels like to just be absolutely gassed and feel like you don't have anything left.
Did you just compare yourself to Kobe because you played 90 minutes in rec league soccer games?
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
Don't take this away from me.
No, that's true Mamba mentality. No, it was one of these things where it was almost like Kobe's a storyteller. So part of me is cynical enough to believe that he was playing up the fatigue just to make the movie montage look cooler. Like, you know, when they made the documentary eventually.
Yeah.
But, not only was he tired, like it physically looked like the scene in superhero movies where the villain's beaten the hell out of them. They're just on their last legs and they have to summon everything for like one last punch. Yeah. Like that last 3 minutes was Kobe calling in Mjolnir as Cap and just like running at Thanos and knowing that was all he had left. Like he literally like looked like he was going to collapse on the floor after the game was over as he was giving his good, like his farewell. Well speech following the game. Yeah. He was pacing around like somebody trying not to pass out. Like it was an incredible just like summation. The whole game I think summed up so much of who Kobe is, like outside of like the circumstances obviously, because if it really was a Hollywood movie, that would have been a game 7 of the finals that he was laying it all out for or something like that. But outside of that, like it just summed up like the willpower, like the just never giving up and the just like supreme belief in himself to continue to fight during that, even that meaningless game. Like he was such a competitor. He's like, it doesn't matter to the Jazz, it really doesn't matter to the Lakers, but like I am Kobe Bryant and I'm not going to lose my final NBA game.
And he didn't. Spoiler alert. That is how the game
for those
ended.
Of you that made it this far and didn't know the outcome yet. Not really sure who that is, but
yeah, they ended up winning. And I remember there were so many things that brought me back. One was that huddle with him, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, and D'Angelo Russell. Just kind of him passing to the torch and then that torch being blown out by the front office.
Yeah, Rob Pelinka taking that torch and throwing it in a lake.
That's basically what happened.
No, that photo of him hugging the young core, I will never forget how many people's avatars that was. And like, I believe that was Anthony's lock screen on his phone for a while.
Right.
Was those four hugging together, or like those five hugging, and it was like Kobe passing the torch to the young core. And you know, like I remember even in his final interview after the game, I was watching it because they showed it after the re-air, and he was talking about, he's like, you know, just because I'm not playing anymore doesn't mean that I'm not going to be helping these guys like Julius, Jordan, you know, D'Angelo. Like I'm gonna be texting them and talking to them about like, you know, what position to get, the where they best are suited getting the ball and what to do with it and whatever. And like I have no doubt that Kobe still talked to those guys via text when they reached out to him because they've all said as much and whatever. Yeah. It was just like knowing the outcome that those guys were not all going to be Lakers for too much longer. It was like almost this unintentionally funny moment, but also like summed up who he became at the end of his career. He was no longer the guy that was just going to scream at teammates and whatever. Like there was a little bit of like an understanding that the end is here and that it's time to move along. And in the way that he kind of tried to pass the torch and did seemingly genuinely try to help those guys. And by all accounts did from everything that they've said since then, even before he passed.
Boy, who outlasted? Who was the last one standing? Was it Randle?
No, it was Zoo. Oh no, wait, Zoo wasn't on that team yet. He was the next draft class.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it was Randle from that core.
Hold on, because the year Clarkson and Nance got traded to Cleveland, was Randle already in New Orleans?
No, because that trade freed up the cap space to sign a second.
Oh, right.
And so Julius was still on the team, and they didn't re-sign him that summer that LeBron came.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Julius was the last one. Yeah,
that's crazy. Who would have thought? Not me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought D'Angelo was going to be a star for, like, the Lakers. So, you know, definitely not me at the time of watching this game.
Yeah, I like how you prefaced it for the Lakers, because he did somehow make an all-star game last year.
Yeah, I mean he made it into the all-star game. I don't know if I'd it's this weird thing where like semantics or whatever, I don't know if I consider him like a star yet, but like he's not a star in the sense of like you build around that guy, but he has turned himself into a very good player. That was not meant as D'Angelo shade.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So funny. I tweeted from the Silver Screen and Roll account. Look how far all of these players have come. D'Angelo Russell made an all-star game. Jordan Clarkson's a valuable contributor on a playoff team. Shelvin Mack.
He led the Magic in assists with like 3.4 or something 1 year. And they made a graphic out of it. And that was a great day of off-season content. I think it was in August when like all of us had nothing to do but roast the Magic on social media for that graphic. That
I
very
would give anything.
Graphic. I would give
anything for that graphic right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would watch Shelvin Mack play like a pickup basketball game at this point. that's how much I'm ready for basketball to be back. But to get back to this game and, you know, away from the return of the Mac, I thought it was going back to the fatigue thing. Like Kobe also like the final moment. First of all, I did not remember that Jordan Clarkson scored the final basket of that game on an fast break dunk because I don't think Kobe could have ran down the court another time. So that actually worked out pretty well for the Lakers. You know, JC took that burden on. But then when Kobe subbed out, they sent Ryan Kelly in for him, which first of all was just like such a weird moment to have that be the guy that subbed in and dapped Kobe up on his way out of his last NBA game. But there was this moment of confusion where Kobe was like ready to guard the inbounds pass and did not want to come out. Like he thought Ryan Kelly was coming in for someone else. And it's like even up like what were they up like 8 or something like that at that point? He did not want to come out and he was ready to guard. I think it was Gordon Hayward's inbound pass, like rather than go and sit out the last couple of seconds and get a standing ovation. Like he wanted to make sure that he secured that win. And, you know, like that was Kobe, you know, for better or worse. And like that was the guy that like the Lakers had for 20 years. And, you know, that it's just like, but I don't know. I'm just glad that we got to rewatch that game. And I'm glad that we always have it in the time capsule. And it was just like a lot of fun, especially right now.
Yeah, I honestly, after that game, I was just like, I could not imagine that game ending any other way. Like, it had to end that way.
I also thought that, like, outside of the game, some of the stuff that he said afterwards was interesting and just, like, kind of a window into Kobe and how he wanted himself to be portrayed and also what he valued. And, like, first, like, one of the things that I caught from, like, his, and this is his final address to the crowd. This wasn't even to reporters, where he just said, like, he continued to repeat, like, we did it the right way. I stayed through the down years, didn't leave when it got tough. And it was, like, hard to not feel like that was a little bit of, like, subtle shade, or not really even that subtle, but shade at, like, NBA stars and, you know, future shade at Kevin Durant, who had not moved teams yet because when things got tough. But, like, it was a very Kobe critique of the current player empowerment era, or superstar empowerment era, to be more accurate, where superstars want to play together and they make all these moves to make sure that it happens. And like, not that Kobe never had great teammates, because he obviously did. He gets dinged for it. But like, Kobe, other than the time that he demanded a trade, and to be fair to him, the Lakers seemed pretty listless then, he pretty much just stayed and like went about it. And in the end, he ultimately did stay, other than continuing with his trade demand. Like, they won him back over and he stayed, and even though it was tough. And like, I think that it was very, that was something that he wanted to be remembered in his legacy, as far as like when people looked at the down years and whatever, it's like, oh, well, Kobe didn't leave. He could have left, but he didn't leave because he was loyal like that. And I think that that's kind of who he is as a person, but also very much like a play to like, this is how he wanted to be. He wanted people to remember him. And I also like, on a completely different note, it was just really like almost heartbreaking when the final people that he thanked in that speech were his wife and daughters, like his daughters for always understanding that he had games, and his wife for holding down the family end of it. And it was just like, just now it's tough to rewatch. Like, I'm getting a little choked up, honestly, talking about it. But it's just like, it's tragic, like what happened. And
it is tough, because I felt the same way, and I honestly hadn't brought it up until now. But the one thing that did stand out to me watching that game is just how excited of everyone of his family members that was watching on the sidelines, how excited Gianna was seeing her dad play like the best basketball, honestly, she had probably ever seen him play.
Yeah, she was, or at least that she could probably remember, because she was still really young then.
Yeah.
And like, she was, there was one shot where they cut to her, and it was after one of his shots, and she literally did like the most adorable like gasp, like hands covering her face, like could not believe what he had just done. And it was like, it was so like endearing and heartbreaking at the same time, like knowing what we know now. But she was so clearly like obsessed with basketball and wanted to be just like her dad, and it was just so easy to watch it like in those moments, and like how bad and just how badly everyone wanted it for him on that final night. Like, there was his family obviously to an incredible degree, the Staples Center crowd was incredible, and then like his teammates were just like living and dying every single basket. Like, I thought D'Angelo Russell was going to literally explode at multiple points because he was so excited. And like, it's looking back, like, this was right in the wake of Nick Young Snapchat gate, whatever we're calling it. And like, you know, I think for him, like, at that point, he probably just wanted to feel like he was part of the team again and whatever in some ways. But it was also like telling of like how, I think maybe a little bit about how their relationship was and just how badly all of the young guys and all of the, everybody on the team just wanted it for Kobe. And like, the one thing that I mention every single time I remember this game and that stood out again while watching tonight is like, Julius Randle committed like not just illegal screens that night, like borderline assault that like could have had charges filed over it on some of those, like there are linebackers watching tape of the screens that Randle set that night, because he knew the moment. Like, and that's a credit to him. He's like, I am going to help Kobe go out on top if, like, you know, if one of these guys dies trying. And you know, that was just like, it was just awesome how much all of them and everybody involved just wanted to win. And even Byron, like, to have a sense of the moment of like, let's sub him out with 4.8 left just to make sure that he gets one last standing ovation, like, as he leaves the game and all that. Like, I just thought like the Lakers and everyone involved did an incredible job.
Yeah. To your point about the players on the team, man, like, I think Julius Randle is a year or two older than me. So he, like a lot of players on that really young team, just grew up idolizing Kobe Bryant.
There are photos of a young Randle in like a Kobe jersey that he posted his first night getting drafted. He was a big Kobe guy.
And to have that moment with him, just like getting the front row seat to the Kobe Bryant show, one that they hadn't really had all season just because of how bad they were and how old and hampered by injuries he had been, you know, up to that point in his career, to get to watch Kobe do something like that, I think is a moment they'll never forget, especially considering the circumstances now. I mean, Jordan Clarkson earlier today posted a picture on Instagram in remembrance of, you know, the 4-year anniversary of this game, because, you know, I think for Lakers fans, it was an important game because it was Kobe Bryant's last game. But when you look back at this isolated game, forget, you know, the other 81 games that were played that season. If you look at this game.
I often try to.
Yeah. if you look at this game, it was the greatest finale from an NBA player that we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think, you know, like Larry Nance Jr. has played in finals games, and I believe he still said it's like the most important game he's ever been a part of. And so I'm sorry if I misquoted him, but I believe I remember him saying that. And like the whole thing, you mentioned Randle looking up to him and having a front row seat. We talked about Gianna sitting right there. And like the whole thing was also just a reminder of how many people Kobe resonated with and how many people like Julius Randle probably dreamed about that moment. It was probably, again, like he probably dreamed that it was in a finals game. He was setting screens to help Kobe win finals MVP and get a ring and whatever. But like, he probably dreamed about helping, like getting to help send Kobe off like that and play with his idol and whatever. And Gianna, we know, had like big basketball dreams from watching him. And like, it was hard. One of the things that I kept thinking about while watching him address the media after the game again was like, he was also like taking questions in Spanish and Italian. And just like, they were like, no translation needed. He spoke the languages and just answering them fluently back, not feeling the need to translate back. And I think that also is a reminder of why he resonated with so many people globally.
Yeah.
Because it didn't matter what country you were from, or, you know, I mean, obviously he didn't speak every language in the world or what language you spoke, but like, he connected on people's levels and like in their own like space and in a way that they understood, like very freely, in a way that I don't even know if there's ever been another NBA star who does that. And it's just like, it's another reminder of why he was so, not just because he played for the Lakers, which are such a worldwide brand, and because of his story and all of that stuff, but you know, he talked all the time that season about being a storyteller, and he communicated that story really well to everyone. And like, it was just like, this game was just another reminder of why so many people hold him in such high esteem and like look up to him and use his journey as kind of motivation for their own like hard work and habits and things like that. Like, I mean, I know like me looking up to Kobe, like, you know, I've talked about this before, but you know, watching the way that he approached things was like kind of the way that I tried to approach blogging. It was like, I really enjoy this and I'm going to try and be as good as I possibly can be at it. And I'm going to do it every single day as much as I can until I get there. And like, I don't know if without like watching someone like Kobe growing up, I would have had that. And I'm sure a lot of people felt the same way. And watching him dig deep in this game again was like just another reminder of that.
Do you have any parting thoughts before we sign off here?
Yeah. Where would you mentioned greatest finale any NBA players ever had. And I think I probably agree with you. Otherwise, like, I think Jordan would have been in contention had he not come back with the Wizards. But like his series winning shot and maybe career, you know, against the Jazz was would have been pretty incredible. But like, I think I was wondering like where you think it ranks up there with like just TV finales in general. Like, honestly, like, I think, like, it's hard to think of, like, if you consider that those 20 years, like, Kobe Bryant, the series, almost, like,
the story,
it is, like, yeah, they, like, they bring back all the old characters, like, you have all his old teammates in the background making their cameos as he's speaking, like, you have all the figures from his career in the building watching, cheering, going crazy as it's all going on, like, it almost, it honestly reminded me a little bit of The Office finale, where the season that preceded it, like, was not all that great, but then they brought it home for one of the most incredible finales of any TV show I've ever watched that just completely stuck the landing in just about every way, and was so much better than everything that came before it in that season. Like, I thought that that was that's a little bit what it reminded me of, is just like, you know, and it's like the storybook, like, happy ending, or at least it seems like it, and then, you know, like, obviously it ended up not being the storybook happy ending in the end, but like, as far as his NBA career went, this was the perfect send-off and finale, I think, that like anyone could have really written up.
And that is as good of a comparison I could have made. Halfway through you saying that, I had thought about it. I obviously wasn't going to interrupt you, but that is where my mind was headed to. Especially when you talked about the second to last season not being great, I thought that you were right on the nose with that. But God, thinking of, definitely not Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's not. No, it's not. It's not Game of Thrones. I haven't seen the series finale of Veep yet, but I've been assured it's very good. I'm trying to think of like other shows that even compare as far as like sticking the landing, and honestly, like, none are coming to mind. It's a really hard thing to do. Breaking Bad, I guess, like, kind of is up there, although Breaking Bad the entire final season was good and like must watch TV, although I know, I think you've weirdly
seen it yet.
You are so,
I'm so sorry.
I mean, I'm struggling to think of any others that like I've watched that did as well as far as like you know, wrapping it up. Like, I'm an avid comic book nerd. Like, I remember watching the series finale of Arrow this year and just being like, really? Like, we had to use the whole season to try and backdoor pilot something else, like, and whatever. And like, the series finale was all right. I don't know if you watch those shows, but like, it wasn't like, it didn't hit home in all the ways that I necessarily would have wanted it to, just because like everything before it wasn't that great. And, you know, it's just, again, it's just amazing that Kobe and the Lakers and all of them were able to make it happen for him in like this way. And for him to just to go get 60, like, that's just crazy to go and do that in his final game, and with how many injuries he had overcome and how many dings he had that season. Like, it's just, it's wild. And like, I'm glad, I'm even more glad 4 years later that we have that night to look back on.
I could not agree more. And with that, I think that's a good spot to end our podcast, unless you have,
you're learning. I don't
final thoughts.
You're learning. I don't have anything this time.
All right. Well, with that, we will sign off for the week, and hopefully we'll have a good show next week too, because boy, who knows what we're going to talk about a week from now.
Yeah, I mean, let's just, again, let's all do like an NBA, like a basketball dance, that like they get some testing figured out and they can figure out a way to bring this thing back safely and, you know, responsibly.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.